This is Will's Band of the Week for May 3rd, 2020. Hello, and welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with Craig from the Ipswich Bureau.
Here I am again, back from wherever I was gone.
The Ipswich Bureau was just closed down. I heard that your studio, all the lights were off, and there was complete silence for the last 2 months or so.
Dust had gathered on the terminals here, but a bit of spring cleaning and we're ready to go.
All right. So this is a question I have. I'm very concerned about the smokehouse. Are they still alive?
They were doing a crowdfunder.
Uh-huh.
I haven't actually given them any money, I'm going to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they were, you know, were these asking, I think it was £10 for a tote bag maybe, or you could just give. You don't have to take, you know, you could just give money, and then 15 for a t-shirt and mm-hmm. 50. Someone had gone for the high options, which makes you feel less bad, right? You think, oh, maybe I should give them some money, and you go and look, the £500 option was gone. So someone's given them some money, so that makes me feel a bit less bad.
Oh, that's good.
And that was something like, have your name written on the wall of the smokehouse, and free entry to everything for a year, including the multi-venue festival, which happens in the autumn, hopefully happens in the autumn this year. But,
oh, wow. So. That's pretty creative, though. That's more than they've been doing. Really, the music venues around here haven't really done anything yet in terms of, they basically just haven't done anything. You know, they're kind of just shut down and waiting, I guess. But I wonder if they'll try to ramp it up by doing something like that.
Yeah, my favorite one in London, I know, obviously, rent is it's more expensive in London than virtually anywhere. But the favorite place we go is the Lexington. I've given a lot of live reports on Will's Band podcasts from there. It's costing them £25,000 a month. Just to subsist at the moment. They're shut, obviously, just to pay the rent. And so that I gave them something, because that's my absolute favorite place to go. And if that was shut, I just don't know. So many bands we like who come to London wouldn't be able, they haven't been able to play. So it's important the Lexington stays open.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it seems like rock shows with crowds of people packed in are going to be one of the last things that come back, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't say it better myself. I think that's correct.
At this point, I'm hoping for South by Southwest 2022. It seems ridiculous to be thinking that far out, but just seems unlikely it would happen next year. I don't know. I'd like to go back whenever it does come back. So we'll see.
It's just, I mean, you know, I think, like I say to a lot of friends, I'm happy to talk about it and it's fun to speculate, but we just don't know. No one knows, do we? So it's just, you can talk about it, but you can't say it as if no one has any insight, wisdom, or special knowledge of what's going to happen.
Right. Right. And it's an interesting psychology, because bands put out notices, you know, that their tour is getting delayed, and some of them are delayed until September or something in that range. And I always think that's really not very likely to happen. You know, so psychologically, I just assume that there will be nothing until we confirm that something actually does happen, rather than assuming it's going to happen and then being disappointed, you know. Same thing with sports. You know, will they be able to... when does the Premier League season generally start? Like, what? I can't remember the time frame.
Yeah, it depends a little bit on whether there's an international competition the following summer or the Olympics or something, but... let's say mid-August, like the second or third Saturday in August, it would normally begin.
Hmm.
And we're going to have the Olympics next summer, supposedly. So they'd have to finish. Well, they could run at the same time as that, but some of the players would be going. So it's just a bit, it starts to get so complicated, doesn't it?
Right. Yeah. And here that people are talking about sports starting with no fans in the stands, or like spreading them out. But you still have the trick that the players are at risk and they're closer together. And, you know, you, how do you avoid that? It's pretty difficult.
Yeah. So. They said there's 92 games, I think, of the Premier League season remaining, the one that's paused.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd need 40,000 tests for this disease if they're going to resume the season and play those games.
40,000 tests?
They could give those. They could donate those tests to the country. But then is there any justifiable argument for the millionaire footballers using those tests when there's people dying of the disease, ordinary people? It's just a bit of a difficult moral issue there.
Right. Yeah, it sure is.
If they can afford to buy those tests, they should give them, they should donate them to the country rather than sport is kind of fun, but not essential at the moment. I don't know. There's right. so many arguments you could have, isn't there?
Right. Yeah. And a related point, I did watch the second season of Sunderland Till I Die. That was fun. Those Sunderland fans are just nuts, right? But I guess
they're very very loyal.
In a lot of places, they have loyal fan bases like that. But this one was more focused on the owner, who seems like a pretty good guy, in kind of an impossible situation. You know, trying to make the team improve, but when they're demoted down to or relegated down to League One, the revenue just isn't there, so they can't afford to pay players enough to have a good enough team to advance back up, and it's pretty interesting.
It's good insight into the way these things are run, isn't it? It's a nice case study when you get in depth, see the people who are behind the scenes running the show.
Right, and it seems pretty candid. You know, obviously they probably edit out things that they think are embarrassing or whatever. yeah. Well, you have a lot of content, so this was probably appropriate to only have your list on the podcast, and we're of course talking about Craig's Best of the Decade, because you also had you were going to mention some live shows, so this is going to be like a totally content rich podcast.
Yeah, if anything, I feel slightly more strongly about the live stuff, but it's just more my area of interest. Once I know I like a band's music, I try and see them live rather than I don't know, can there be another way around? Probably not, but I'm more of a live person, so I got more emotionally invested in that, but I still do have the top 10 of the records too, of course. So.
Yeah, too bad we couldn't do a video version where you could show footage. Didn't you say that you looked up a bunch of your favorite live shows and like several of them were on YouTube, the actual show that you went to?
Yeah, so here's what we... should we have the jingle first or should we just go the live jingle?
Oh, we should... yeah, I think we should probably do the jingle. That's the best live report jingle of the decade, I think, right?
Yeah, unsurpassed. So this is the process I began with. If you go to Songkick, you have to Google for it. They don't have it on their own website, but someone's created this script where you can extract all the shows you've been to into a spreadsheet, CSV, and then into Excel.
Wow.
And then I deleted everything that wasn't from 2010 to 2019, and that left me with 450. It was around 445, maybe.
That is unbelievable.
So then I just started cutting. I texted my friend on WhatsApp and said, I'm cutting this down now. Within 10 minutes, it was down to 200. Then I had some lunch, and then I came back. But I should also say, I kind of knew in my mind some of them. It wasn't as if the list prompted me. It was a little bit of both. I guess that was the same with the records, too. You kind of have an idea, and then you have to go back and just have a look at what you were listening to at the time and have a little think.
Right.
So some of these I just knew, and then some I was reminded by seeing them in the listings. So and then our co-podcaster David said in the behind the scenes, the listeners don't want to know too much about this behind the scenes stuff, but we can just tell them that David had the idea. Why don't you see if there's any video footage of these things? And so I started going down from 10, 9, 8, 7, nothing, nothing, 6, no, 5, yes. I thought, this is good. Number 4, yes. 3, no, sadly. But 2, I've got this bit wrong. But anyway, basically 4 of the top 5, there is video footage on YouTube of these shows, which is pretty cool, actually.
So did you search the name of the band and the venue or something like that?
Yeah, and I have the dates from Songkick, which is really helpful, because you think, sometimes you know the year you saw a band, but you don't know this day very often off the top of your head. So the people who put the YouTube videos on kind of put the date sometimes, so that's helpful.
It makes me wish that I had kept a running list of all the live shows that I've seen. But I never did it, and then, so now I find myself not remembering if I was at a show or not.
Well, that still happens. I had this database, and I thought, I don't remember being at that, but so who could you check with? You can't.
Right. I remember that I saw Connor Oberst, and I remember thinking it was great. And then I can't remember who went with me, and I remember thinking, I thought Barrett was with me, but then I think I asked him, and I don't think he was. So it's like, well, at least I remember I was at the show. I also have a friend who keeps the ticket stubs from every show that he goes to, but of course now they don't have ticket stubs anymore, so I don't know what he's doing. Maybe he keeps a digital image, you know?
Yeah.
That's easy enough to do. But, he posted something, a few months ago and was like, tickets from The Cure from 1984 or something. It was just really great,
Pretty cool when you see those.
Yeah.
And things like, I don't know, Joy Division or The Smiths, and it's £2 or something.
Right. Yeah.
It's about cheap. Obviously inflation, but the amount seems incredibly low.
Yeah, I think I saw U2 for $8.50. And it was £6, back in 1981, maybe 1980. Yeah.
They were pretty big then, though, weren't they? They were popular, I think.
Their first album, Boy, made a pretty big splash, so yeah. But I saw them at a 1,000-person venue.
Oh, yeah. What's big to me is not stadiums at that point, but nice theaters, sort of, really.
Yeah, and enough that they weren't so big you couldn't just... We were probably pretty close to the front,
Mm-hmm.
So, well, anyway, do you want to go through the list then of the live shows?
Here we go. I've got it. Normally, if it's for each year, I do a top five. But I thought as it's 10 years, I'd do 10, and so I won't ramble too much. But there might be some interesting bits and pieces I can share. So, number 10. This was from November 2013, in Brighton, and I remember being there with Amanda. And afterwards, I said, "This is the best show of the year," and I'm going to justify that now by putting it among the best shows of the decade. So it wasn't just drunk or being silly.
Mm-hmm.
This is Crystal Stilts from Brooklyn, as people will probably know, and The Proper Ornaments, who were one of those bands who I saw a lot in this period of time. And so it's kind of nice for me to be have them in there. I'm kind of thinking like that. They're both jangle pop, and it was just, well, there we go. I said at the time that I really enjoyed it. It's one of my favourite venues is the Green Door Store in Brighton. It's under the railway station as you come in. It's a good kind of cave-like place under the railway arches with a cobbled floor. Nice and small, good atmosphere.
So you can take the train there and then you're just right there.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's kind of cool.
You just come under and there's a little guy who sells burritos just between the station and one of those food carts. So that's pretty good as well.
So
off the train, quick burrito.
Yeah. It reminded me of a process question. So it sounds like you are judging these as the gig as a whole. So if there's multiple bands, then that they both get considered. It's not just by band.
Yes and no, partly. Some of these are like that, actually. I just remember that stuck in my mind. And then, because I like both of those bands so much, kind of either of them on their own wouldn't have been quite so good. But when they're both good, it kind of elevates the whole thing, I guess.
Yeah. All right. Cool.
Crystal Stilts. Yeah, brilliant. I absolutely loved them. And unfortunately, he did have an album out in this decade, but their better stuff was before, so they didn't make it into the records.
Mm-hmm.
And then May 2016, the first time I saw The Chills from New Zealand. We were on our way to, we were in Wales to see the Manic Street Preachers, one of Amanda's favourites, the next day, but so happened that The Chills were playing in Cardiff on the night before, so that worked out very nicely. And it was just a band you've always wanted to see, imagine that you're wanting to see a band for all that time, they've got a new album out and it's really good. That was the Silver Bullets album.
Oh, yeah.
And then
yeah.
When they play all the hits and the new record as well, and I had a quick chat with them afterwards. So it was just, again, one of those really nice, fun evenings.
Great.
Okay, now this is and that's where I have to start explaining. A lot of these are just, I don't know what other people look for, but really in my mind, when I think back to these events, it was just fun, really. and other people may be looking for to be able to hear all the different instruments. They want particularly a good evening from the bass player or something, or being able to hear the drums. And they, yeah, that's important to me too. But it's these 10 shows were just fun, and that's really what I'm looking to get out of going to live music. So this was Sauna Youth and a couple of other good bands supporting them, Omi Pallone and Cold Pumas, at a place called the Macbeth in London, Shoreditch, March 2014, I can tell you, because I had the Songkick data. Now, why was this special? Because beforehand, a couple of days before, they said, it's a free show, everyone. It's a pub, this is really they're playing, about 150 people can fit in. It's a free show, and you can register for your free ticket online. So from now, from 10 a.m., quickly, go on, yep, in the bag. Email comes through, yep, you're on the list. Then on the day, they said, thank you, everyone, for registering for your free tickets. It's first come, first served. If you get there first, you can come in. Once the queue's building up, it's one in, one out. And we thought, well, hold on. What's going on here? What's the point of the tickets then? So we got there nice and early. And then these people just kept coming in and in and in, and it got so packed. And then all the bands that were playing were from around this area in the east of London. And when the bands weren't playing, the other bands were just standing at the front watching them and singing along to their songs. And it just built and built and built. And the bands got progressively better. And by the time Sauna Youth came on, all of their friends were there singing along to every single word. And the crowd was just bouncing around and going completely wild, quite drunk by this time after six bands. Uh-huh. It was just a really fun night. We were just laughing, tears of laughter, as well as enjoying the good music.
That's great.
One of those funny things. Then Jeffrey Lewis, who's from New York. I've talked about him a little bit on the podcast. This was in Norwich Arts Centre in December 2015. Again, just I haven't got too much to say about it. He's just great, really good. He's funny, he's charming, witty, and his songs also kind of have some emotional moments too. And when he's good, he's really good. And this was just before Christmas. Amanda had her work Christmas party and was so drunk, she was sitting on the floor. I said, you're missing this amazing show. She just couldn't really be present in the moment, unfortunately. But never mind.
So that was number 7?
Yeah, so I'm not really doing this properly. The 6th best show of the decade now. This is the one which there's no video evidence, I'm sorry. But from the next 5, there is, after this one. So this is Protomata supporting the band Eagles, a Protomata from Detroit. Eagles are from Leeds in England. This is October 16 in Hull. I remember texting my friends the next day, or maybe even that night. Well, I maybe even texted you and said I've just seen a 10 out of 10 show from Protomata and Eagles. Nothing could be better than this.
I think
absolutely
you did,
amazing.
Yeah. Now, was
part of the reason was is this Adelphi venue in Hull. It's a real ale place where they have really good beer, and they had this licorice porter, I remember. So we were drinking this licorice porter, got right to the front, and I could, if I put my arm out, I'd have been touching the bass or the guitar of the person on the stage. It was that close.
Uh-huh.
And it was just, Protomata are great. And Eagles, I don't usually like them, but it just, when you had one great band, they came on and just played the scuzzy rock, and it was just, great to be there.
Yeah, that's great. Now, was that the first time you had seen Protomata, or had you seen them before?
Oh, I don't remember.
So
I think I had seen them before, but this would have been the best of which I've seen them.
I saw them several times, and I just think probably whenever the first time was, just seeing that Joe Casey's stage persona was pretty cool. if you like that kind of thing, which you and I both do, so
yeah.
Okay, now we're up to number 5.
Now the listeners can go to YouTube and find evidence of these shows from now on. And we're going to have a little clip of the number 1 show. So 5th best show of the decade, September 2019. This is the most recent one. Aldous Harding, Music Hall of Williamsburg in Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah.
And I reviewed this before on the podcast, so I won't go into too much detail. But what I said at the time was, I was on my own there, and I just think it was a Monday evening, and I wandered down, had something to eat, and I got my can of Brooklyn Lager for $10 or something.
Yeah.
I thought, well, I better make this last. I was just standing on my own at the back. It's quite a large room, the Music Hall of Williamsburg. And I just think it was fine because I didn't have anyone else there to look after or to chat with. And I was just very focused in my own mind and was able just to really observe and listen. And she's so ethereal almost. And it's good if you could block everything else out and just enjoy the stage presence of Aldous Harding. I think had it been a Friday night and we'd had been to, you know, six bars on the way there, this is not the kind of thing that she's suited for. So everything just rolled together very nicely. Yeah, superb performing artist, Aldous Harding from New Zealand.
Okay.
That's on YouTube. Loads and loads of stuff is on. iPhones were in existence. But then the fourth best show of the decade, The Pains of Being Pure at Heart, headlining the Indie Tracks Music Festival in 2010, July.
Wow, that was like, that was the heyday, The Pains of Being Pure at Heart, you know, this exciting twee band from Brooklyn, right?
Yeah, I loved them. Saw them so many times that were brilliant, but this was in this decade, so that helped. A couple of them were before, couldn't make it in. It's just, you know, you've been at the music festival all day, one of your favourite bands of the time is coming up, and we got right to the front again, and I just remember him, I still see it vividly, bouncing around next to a friend of mine, and her hair was flying all over the place, and it's just fun, pure joy, yeah. Is how I describe it.
That's great.
Now, I realise I'm rambling a little bit, this is a bit self-indulgent, so I'll just keep going. The third best show of the decade. Well, spoiler alert for a little bit later on, maybe. November 2010. A group of four friends, well, me and three others, went to Austria and the Czech Republic to see Crystal Castles, who their second album had just come out at the time, and the four of us liked them quite a lot. I remember texting them one day from work saying, this is a Friday, Saturday night, should we go over to Austria and the Czech Republic to see this? And this is one of those times when you just had a brilliant day with friends, you know, of course a few beers, you're in Vienna, wandering down to the venue. It's one of these, again, under the railway arches ones with a curved roof, and it's sort of, you all feel packed in that kind of place. And by that time, Crystal Castles were playing very big venues in the UK, and the places they're playing in the European tour were too small for them, really. And so that's kind of cool, just a mad, bouncing, crazy audience. And there's some stuff on YouTube, so people can go along and have a look. Male Bonding was supporting, but we missed them because we were drinking beers, so... I did quite like the band Male Bonding at the time as well.
Yeah.
And then, a podcast favourite. Always. This is September 2017. I also reviewed this on the podcast at the time. On the boat in Bristol. Bristol Thekla. And this was Amanda and I. We had a nice day in Bristol. We had some nice artisan pizzas. You can tell by live reviews that it involved peripheral things around the music.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it makes for the day. And if you've had a nice day, you're going in with a good attitude. And then when you go to Thekla in Bristol, it's literally a boat moored in the harbour there. And you go over this drawbridge, or well, it's more of a castle drawbridge, a gangplank, I guess, up on into the boat. And then you go down into the bowels of the boat. You think you're going to go into the engine room or something. And then it had, you know, so small in there. And Always second album had come out, which is great, as well as the first one. And the sound was so amazing, so warm. And when you see Always, they have this really rich, fuzzy, warm sound. I mean, they're a great, great band.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think I saw them twice, once after each album. It might have been three times because this is the problem I was telling you about. Like, I can't remember how many shows I've been to.
Yeah.
But the one of the times was in a big theater. And it was almost a little bit too, I mean, it had that great warm sound and very tuneful, but it was almost so well, just the sound was great, but the intensity was lower and it was kind of almost like laid back. I liked it a little better when they were a little louder. But these are just little subtle things. I mean, they were great band both times.
Yeah, and those are often things, you know, as we observe as we come into the number one here, you know, the bands are trying hard every time. I guess if they're on a long tour, some nights they'll be more tired than others. That's fair enough. But, you know, often the mood of the audience, the mood you're in, whether you've had a good day, whether you've got a good spot, a good drink in your hand.
Yeah.
The band can't control any of this. The sound, okay, they do a sound check and they have good sound people at most of these venues. But again, you could be in a bad spot. It could just be bad that day. So a lot of things have to go right.
There's so many little subtleties and, like you said, extraneous things that affect your experience. Yeah. And I've only had, and it's amazing actually to me that bands that tour and play so much can sort of hold it together and seem like they're, they probably are usually having a good time. But you have to imagine, like, there's a lot of times that the band is having a bad day, or they're, you know, infighting, getting in arguments, and whatever. And then you don't really see that as an audience. I can think of just a couple of shows that I saw where it seemed like, I just think they're having a bad day, you know, where I thought like I could notice. But that doesn't happen very often. So
no, it doesn't actually. You're amazing how professional. A lot of these people aren't full-time musicians who the bands that we like, are they? And, you know, they're amazingly professional.
Yeah, they are.
That's something else I think about as well. I had a friend of mine in London. He was playing in some small bands there, you know, like a lot of people do. And he just, like, I'm sure he's a good musician, but he was saying he was the bass player, and he wasn't good enough for the other people in the band. And I thought, you know, even in these indie rockers, they're proficient at their instruments, really.
Mm-hmm.
At least to get to the level the bands we're talking about here. You or I, you more so, Will. You can actually play instruments, but they're really, really good. And to be able to do that on the stage, I don't know, you've got to have some respect for them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So you gave me the spoiler alert because we had to queue up your number one live show. So before we get to that, there's an omission of something that I expected to be on your list that is not.
Oh no! I messed up with my cutting of the long list.
There is one band that I thought somewhere along here we're gonna hear about this band. Okay, you ready? Okay. It's Half Man, Half Biscuit. I thought I thought one of their shows would sneak its way into your top 10.
Do you know they were in the? I think they got down to the final 25 or something.
Uh-huh.
It was a, you know, but you've drawn up many lists yourself of these kind of things, and you just sooner or later you have to cut somewhere, don't you?
Yeah. And plus you had
I saw
so
David
many
in the top 11 for his records because you just can't.
Yeah, right.
Sometimes.
Yeah, it's funny. All right, let's talk about number one then.
Well, the people might be surprised to hear that British Sea Power are here, and there could have been 10 of theirs in here, but I made a point. Amanda said you can only have each band once in here, and I did the same for the records, really. And so this was just a night of sheer joy again. British Sea Power at Manchester Gorilla on 12th of April 2013. Let's play that a little bit because Melissa probably wants some music, and then I can just say a little bit more about it.
All right, here's a clip from YouTube. Well, of course, I was watching on the video, which the listeners can't see, but they will if they watch the YouTube video. But I can really get a feel for why you like them so much as a live band. They just they're very professional, but I don't know, I'm gonna just blabber, but they look like they're and sound great.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I'm surprised that sounds as good as it does. And if you know the song, that's the song Bear, a little clip there, and it's about 6 minutes. It starts off with him just singing, and then it comes into that kind of synth bit, which is absolutely astonishing. It is one of the better live songs, but yeah, you don't expect it to sound as good as that. You can even hear the little bits and pieces. So,
and there, and then you can see that the instruments we didn't hear. There's somebody with a violin, and there's a guy holding a trumpet. It's like
yeah,
wow,
I think the trumpet guy is playing on the keyboard in that song. I think it helps out, maybe.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this was just, it was a Friday night. They'd done two nights. We only went to the second one, which is a bit surprising for us. I think maybe we were at work. And the crowd was just absolutely wild. And, you know, these things are spontaneous. Sometimes the crowd just kicks off and sometimes it can be flat. I just remember the drummer at one point, obviously he's a little bit raised, so you can see. And he just had the broadest grin, just like laughing or how wild the crowd was and how great the atmosphere was. And to see, and then the crowd just feeds off that even more when you see the band enjoying it even more because the crowd's enjoying it. It's a big circle of fun. So good one.
Fantastic.
And then afterwards, my favorite beer at the time, one of the better beers in Britain at the time, was this beer called Hop Head from Dark Star Brewery, which is near Brighton, where British Sea Power are based. And they sponsored British Sea Power on the tour. They gave them like 3 barrels of this beer for the tour to put in their van. So afterwards, it didn't happen at every time by any means, but now and again, we would go backstage for a drink with the band, maybe 5 times in all the many times I've seen them or something. And they were just cracking open this barrel of beer. So Amanda got hold of a bottle of wine, and I had my glass with this beer that I really liked, and then we went out into the streets. You know, it's just wonderful, really.
Just adds to the memorable nature of the whole does, thing,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Thanks everyone for indulging me as I went through those.
Yeah.
The top 10 gigs of the decade.
That is
good
great.
Memories. Really good memories.
Really great. Well, hopefully not too long from now, but let's say hopefully in less than a year, you'll be able to resume your impressive list of live performances observed.
Yeah, I do miss it. Hopefully it won't be. Who knows? I think, like you said, 2021 is a good year. It wouldn't be before. Who knows?
Well, on to the recorded music now.
Sounds good.
So I've got this queued up, and how fun. It's always just so fun. And all these are so fun to listen to, and I think the listeners will really enjoy hearing these.
So, yeah, I don't think there's too much here which is from left field. But I just, you know some of your favourites. I thought, what was my process really? I thought about the things I liked best at the time, particularly going back to the early part of this decade.
Mm-hmm.
I thought revisit them, and I found that I still liked them a lot. So I wasn't going to pick out something I've never heard before from 2011 to see if it would make the list. That's just not really what I had time. It's not had the right way to do it, in my opinion. But of course, everyone has their own process.
Right.
So this is how I came upon this list.
So I bet you didn't do an elaborate scoring system like Anurag did, though.
No, I don't. I don't think I did. No.
Did you hear him talk about his elaborate scoring system?
No, I missed out on that. I need to listen to that.
He did a you can listen to the podcast, but
he
scored them on various criteria and like came up with a number because he needed to have some process by which he could decide how we should rank them. So anyway, everybody has a different method. So let's.
Yeah, I was chatting with a friend yesterday, and I think any method's fine, and this is just the way.
Sure.
Yeah. The things that meant, the records that meant a lot to me at the time, it seems to be a perfectly reasonable way of doing it to me. So,
yeah, I mean, the best method is the method that you think you want to use, you know? That's all, all it is. Yeah. So, all right, number 10.
This is a band from Glasgow. We've got a nice Scottish beer. Well, from a rival city, Edinburgh, but anyway, Twilight Sad.
Yeah.
Now, this is the album No One Can Ever Know from 2012 and not considered to be their best by many people, but I don't know. I liked it a lot at the time, and I was listening to it in preparation for this, and it's great. So, who knows what other people are hearing and what I'm hearing? But it's kind of a little bit more electro. Like the people who criticised it said, "Oh, it's too synthy and electro for me," which is fine if that's your opinion. But it's not that much. I don't, to me, not synth pop or anything. It's not Pet Shop Boys, you know.
Right.
But, it's got the atmosphere and the gloom, and you know, his voice is just. Wonderful vocalist, thick Scottish accent. And, yeah, I picked out the track Nil 5.
And I remember that day, it was a lie. And when the tempers that fray can't go by, be careful what you're selling. You can take a telling, no reason to your lesson. Is that you, son? Is what you used to say? Now you're content in your ways, content in your ways. Who cares if she stays and counting your days? And I remember that day, it was a lie. And when the tempers that fray can't go by, be careful what you're selling, careful what you're selling. You can take a telling. Is that you, son? Is what you used to say? Now you're content in your ways, 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 content in your ways.
The Twilight Sad, No One Can Ever Know. That is Craig's number 10 album of the decade. So when I was queuing these up, most of what's on your list is in my music library. I did a search for The Twilight Sad, and I had, I think, 4 albums and not this one. So it must not have clicked with me at the time, and I must not have just given it that much time. Because it just wasn't
strange,
there.
That kind of fits what I was saying, doesn't it? That people didn't seem to like it that much.
Yeah, and sometimes you don't, you know, I think maybe even more so in our case where we listen to so many things. Sometimes you only give it 5 minutes or less of attention and you're like, I don't know if I'm going to go back to that. It's a bit arbitrary. But
yeah, of course. Yeah.
But it's a band that deserves to be represented, so that's cool.
Yeah, they're good.
All right, number 9.
Well, how can I say about this? There's a record label in, I think he's in London, Sonic Cathedral. They do a lot of shoegaze. He would like number 7 on my list. We'll get to that in a minute. In fact, I think it's his favourite band. And then he did this kind of best albums of 2012, which aren't on my record label. It was pretty cool. So he did his own best ones, and there's this guy called Bill Fay on there. I don't know who this was. And the story just captured me. I think the track he chose to represent it was a cover of Wilco, Jesus, Etc., which is on the album, which is so good. I haven't picked that as my example because I wanted to do something that an original one by Bill Fay. And then I just thought, okay, I'm going to have to listen to the rest of this now. The album is Life is People. Wonderful voice. Mostly piano, ballads, acoustic guitar. It's riven through with lots of religious metaphor, not even metaphor, just direct stuff about Jesus and God, and which is not, doesn't mean a lot to me really. And some people criticize this record, oh, it's too much religion. But surely if you can listen to New Order singing about nothing at all, then you can listen to Bill Fay singing about Jesus. Jesus doesn't really matter,
right?
It's
sure,
beautiful songs, and they mean a lot to him. And the story that grabbed me was, I'm not gonna get the facts right, I'm sorry, my journalism's a bit ropey, but something like in 1960 or the early 70s, he released a couple of albums and then just disappeared. And he had a cult following throughout the decades. And then this album came out in 2012, something like 30 or 40 years after his last album. It's just amazing. And it's just, he wasn't disappeared anymore. It's just pretty cool, actually.
Wow.
I picked, it's really an album you have to, like a lot of these acoustic singer-songwriters, you really have to sit down and listen. And you could pick any other songs, really, if you can give it the time. But track one, There Is a Valley, certainly has the religious stuff in this one. It's a good example. Thank you.
icy wind blows. Trees don't speak, but they speak to each other, other people long ago. When the soldiers came and took away their villages one by one, and the fury of that moment they felt, but could only silently look upon. There is a mountainside where sheep are grazing with their young. Sheep don't speak, but they speak to each other of a killing long ago. When the people came and sacrificed their children to the sun, and the fury of their moment they fell.
Bill Fay, Life is People, from 2012. That's Craig's number 9. I looked on Wikipedia and I saw the list of famous musicians who cite him as an influence, or, you know, as fans. So, yeah, I don't know if I was familiar with Bill Fay at all previously to you telling me about him. So,
yeah, well, I don't know if I would have been, but for this record label, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just amazing how you find these things.
Yeah.
And definitely, I know we have a lot of Wilco fans around here, so you've got to check out that cover. It's, well, I mean, the world's in a sad place at the moment. It's not a good thing to listen to if you're feeling at all down, but brings a tear to the eye.
Well, now I really want to listen to it. I want to listen to it right now, but we have to keep going with your list, I
we
guess.
We have to keep going, yeah. Hope I haven't overblown it. Well, now this is a guy. Kurt Vile. What a personality, yeah. 2011, Smoke Ring from My Halo.
Yeah.
Now this... I haven't really got on with him that well ever since, and I thought this would go on to be one of my favourite artists, but when I heard this, I just embodied that slacker feeling, which I like so much about Jay Maskus and Dinah Shore Jr. The music is different, of course, but although Jay Maskus' solo stuff is kind of similar to this, it's got that lilting, the flickering acoustic guitar. Kurt Vile plays that acoustic guitar so quickly, and the lyrics are just so funny. He's the most lazy, laid-back, indolent person.
Yeah.
And the songs are so good on here.
Yeah, this is a really good one. Fun that you brought it back by putting it on the list.
Yeah, I don't know why I didn't get on with anything since, but it's in a way that kind of reinforces how good this record was. I picked out Peeping Tomboy, which is track 8 on the album.
Kurt Vile, Smoke Ring for My Halo, Craig's number 8. Yep.
Good old Kurt.
Yep, from he's from Philadelphia, isn't he? I think.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And he was in the War on Drugs, and then he went solo, and then The War on Drugs has gone to good albums in the last 10 years as well, actually.
Right. Yeah. Well, and Kurt Vile's done, even if he hasn't had an album that's grabbed you quite as much, he's been pretty successful as an indie rocker throughout the decade. All right, cool. Your number
sounds getting a little bit serious now.
Your number 7 here is one where I looked at that and thought, "Oh yeah, that one was really great. Maybe I should have given that one consideration because just what a great album."
So I'm going to be honest here. I got down to my top 9, and then I had 4 possibilities for the 10th. Actually, this hasn't even come in at number 10. So, and I thought, okay, I'm just going to listen to them all, and then, oh my word. This album is so good.
Yeah, it is.
I can't believe it's 2017. I don't know where the time's gone. Slow Dive, they returned. The British shoegaze band with the self-titled. Every song is brilliant. And it is the perfection of the shoegaze genre, really. This, you know, if all the elements are there on the record. If you like that kind of thing, this is brilliant.
Yeah, I agree.
Glad they came back, because and it wasn't a band I'd ever listened to before. So it's kind of cool when these bands come back and you discover a new favorite.
Well, and not only did they come back, but it's their best album, I think, easily. You know, and people romanticize the a couple of the albums from the 90s, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I liked them back then, but I thought their albums were, you know, 4 really great tracks and 4 or 5 just sort of okay tracks. And I think that this is definitely their best album, which is so cool, right?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Yeah.
It shows that, you know, shouldn't be too cynical when the bands come back, because you never know what's going to happen.
Right.
Well, I picked out, this is the same track I think I picked when I picked it on my top 10 for 2017 at the time, but, well, it's just so good. Track 2, Star Roving.
Slow Dive. We probably had this conversation before, but did you see them live when they toured after this album?
No, and that was a comment I was going to make, actually. Of all the bands on here that I haven't seen Bill Fay, and I would like to, but I really, the band I haven't, you know, Slow Dive is the one band I haven't seen on this top 10 that I really would want to.
So that's going to be a rare, rare instance where I've seen a band that you haven't.
Did you see them at the Chicago Museum of Art or something?
That's what it was, yeah.
You can't really call them that either.
Yeah, I was a little bit worried that it wouldn't seem like a full-fledged show. You know, it was they did all these shows inside the art museum in different types of venues, but they have a couple of lecture hall-type spaces. So where Slow Dive played was a, you know, just like an auditorium that they have inside the art museum. I would guess it maybe had a capacity of like 500 people or something, pretty small. And I just wasn't sure. I thought maybe they'd have like, you know, half the normal volume for a rock show or something, and it wouldn't seem like a real complete show, but it was great. It just, and they had the lighting effects and stuff, and yeah, it was really cool. So, yeah,
I think this is one of the reasons this damn virus needs to go away, so we can have cool stuff like that again.
Right.
Bands playing in art museums.
Right. Right. And it's, you know, we've been talking about this a lot. It's fun to see somebody play spontaneously in their living room or their bedroom or something. That's cool. But, you know, the novelty of that, you know, wears off a little bit, and then you're back to, boy, it'd be fun to see loud music with a big crowd. Someday we'll get to see that again, I think. So, all right, number six.
Wow, here we go. Going on one of my favorites now, Veronica Falls, along with The Painted Being Pure at Heart and Shrag. This is a band I saw so many times in, they're defunct now, I guess more than half through the decade, but back in the early part, I saw them quite a bit. This was their second album, Waiting for Something to Happen. And if you're looking for the jangle pop, which is inspired by Orange Juice, the Scottish stuff, definitely, but also by the Dunedin sound of New Zealand and the Australian jangle pop too, and wrap it into the boy-girl harmonies and superb pop songs, Veronica Falls absolutely nailed it. And, you know, some people would say it was pastiche almost, but if you can pull it off so well, then does it really matter? You know, it's brilliant. And I really did love them. And it's good, you know, one of the fun things about this exercise with the top 10 albums of the decade is to be able to go back and be able to talk about these old things. I was on the podcast in 2013, so there was no opportunity to do it then. So.
Right, yeah.
whenever they played this song, I just said to Amanda, this is my favourite. So that's why I had to pick it. Track 6 from the 2013 album, Waiting for Something to Happen, is If You Still Want Me.
Veronica Falls, Waiting for Something to Happen, 2013. You've got a lot in the 2012-2013 range.
Yeah, it seems to be that way.
Yeah, it's all kind of random, really, I guess, where they come out.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've all done a pretty good attempt, you know, made a good attempt to have a fair, just pick our favorites and not worry about what year they were.
I think so, definitely. Yeah. I didn't, you know, I just, I'm mentioning the years, but it's really an aside more than anything, a factor. I very rarely, but I will mention the production, but you can hear all three vocalists there.
Right.
You know, if you're looking for the harmonies, I don't think you can find a better record anywhere.
Yeah, yeah, that's interesting. The way something is recorded, sometimes the voices blend together almost too much, right? And you can't even tell one from the other, then sometimes they just, by the way it's recorded, it has a different effect. That's cool.
Yeah.
Okay, number five. This is a fun one. It's either the second or the third appearance by this album. And I'm,
I think Jason had it there.
Yeah, and God, didn't somebody else? Did Anurag, Chris? Maybe?
Oh, okay. Yeah, as we said, I haven't listened to Anurags. But Chris mentioned them in the chat, the behind the scenes.
Okay, Anurag did not. But maybe David did? I don't know. I just remember thinking, wow, this album, I liked it. And I liked a whole bunch of this band's albums. But I didn't realize the incredible impression this album made. So, really cool.
Yeah, to me, this is as good as Is This It by The Strokes. I think I said that before on the podcast. This is Parquet Courts, Light Up Gold, 2012. And I remember, I keep mentioning conversations I've had, but this is just how I find out about these things. A friend of mine texted me and he said, new band from New York. You know I don't like recorded music. I've just played the album twice through. You better listen to this.
Yeah.
garage rock, isn't it, really?
Kind of, yeah. Yeah.
And well, I mean, you could just pick anything, but for the sake of picking something, I picked number five. Yonder is closer to the heart.
Parquet Courts, Light Up Gold. That was either their first album or their first album that anybody ever heard, right? It's the first official album,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, you said that, I thought it was their first, but no, yeah. This has happened to me a lot in the past where I say things like that and then it's not true, so I have to be a bit careful.
Sometimes bands have an album that's on, you know, self-released or private label or something, you know, where, you know, small label where just like nobody ever hears of it. So, yeah, I think this one was probably their actual first. But then, you know, yeah. They had a really interesting trajectory through the decade, didn't they? With like a lot of good albums, and some of it slowed down and they were almost sort of dirgy, but it seems like just almost everything they did was good quality.
Yeah, I think so. Good band. The world needs a bit of garage rock, you know. And when I was getting into music, I liked the Hives a lot from Sweden, and the Pattern are a US band, the D4 from New Zealand, the Datsuns. Datsuns are the least good, I guess, of those. But you need some garage in your life, and Parquet Courts brought it back.
And they had sort of a slacker component to it too. So, to me, you know,
some of the songs are slower, aren't they? But that one was a lot of it's very quick. As well, so that's kind of fun when these bands play deliberately fast.
Yeah, definitely. Yep. All right.
There's this famous footage of them in Austin at South by Southwest, not the year we went, unfortunately, way before when the cool kids were there and just playing ridiculously fast.
I saw them when I went to the Pitchfork Music Festival in Chicago. like, I don't know, had to be at least 5 years ago, somewhere around then. Yeah, they're good. They've always been a good live band. Also,
cool band.
Yep, number four.
Well, you know, this is where your definition, the world's definition of a decade, helps me out a bit.
Yeah.
Because I would say the decade is 2011 onwards.
Yeah, we had the little...
But no, if you're going to insist on 2010 being in here, it's a long time ago, but here we go.
Yeah.
Crystal Castles are back.
Yep.
2010! My goodness! It's a long time ago.
Yeah, that is.
Well, this was... It's just called Two, the album. That's what they did. This they're kind of a little bit hip about things. Crystal Castles from Toronto. First album was called One. It's really good, but that was not in this decade. I think it's just perfection of what they're doing, really. You know, they're a bit of an odd band. They became kind of this... It's kind of orchestrated in a way, very choreographed. You have the guy with his hood over his head and then playing around with his synths and his laptops. And then Alice Glass dancing around all over the place, shouting and screaming in the crowd. And it's just, I think the guy's a genius, really. The other way I could, I mean, now I have to caveat it by saying there was perhaps some abusive relationship situation in the band. And if that's the case, I feel very sorry for the situation, but I hope it doesn't detract from being able to enjoy this album still at the time it was made. So I don't want to be seen as someone who just wants to ride roughshod over those situations.
Yeah.
Bit of politics there. But, you know, at the time it was a band I really liked and a great record. And I picked out one of the more listenable ones, great pop music, number four, Baptism.
Crystal Castles. Yeah. Seems like they had this really big boom for like 2 or 3 years, and then they kind of, they weren't indie rock darlings anymore. I don't know if that had anything to do with the whole domestic thing or what, but...
Yeah, I think partly that, and well, Alice left the band, and that's probably understandable given the situation, and then it's not the same. We saw them again after with the new front woman, and it just seemed then the kind of choreography was just so obvious because she was doing exactly what the previous person used to do, and so fall from grace.
Yeah.
But I always think that's okay, you know. Bands can be great for a moment and then go away. That's fine with me. Doesn't really worry me that much.
Yeah, it's the excitement of the moments, which is, you know, notable. So that's really, it's cool. Crystal Castles. All right, number
moving into the top three. We'll be back to Canada later.
Yeah,
but for now.
I see that we're headed back to Canada at some point, but at this point, yeah, obviously you're getting no disagreement with me on number three.
Well, I have to tell a little story here because behind the scenes we were chatting. I think in December or January I got my piece of paper in front of me and I wrote my short list, six things in blue. And these are the ones I knew would be on here. I can't mention two of them at the moment. Protomart is in there in blue pen. I wrote it down months ago. I thought, I don't really want to do this top 10 thing. Other people are mentioning Radiohead and The National. You know, these are such esteemed bands. I don't have anything that good. And then I saw Will's list and I thought, I don't need to feel too ashamed. You know, Will has good taste and we have some common ground. So that gave me the kind of impetus to go through and put the rest on, but find four more.
Yeah.
This is Protomartyr from Detroit, and I was so close to not to having the blue in hell. I can't remember the name of the previous record now, but
the Agent Intellect.
Yes, right? I was so close to having the Agent Intellect. Thanks, Will. And I thought, well, Will's Relatives and Descent there. Okay, I'm going to listen to them both in a row and then to see which is the best. And oh my, Relatives in Descent is so good. They're both good, but this is more of the rockier, punky. I think the Protomartyr would be listening to the Stooges or something. It's kind of the comparison when they recorded this. It's just edgier and just a little bit sharper and better, I guess.
Yeah, which I was saying before, it's kind of amazing, really, because the four albums they put out, I really love all of them. But for the fourth one to be the best one is pretty amazing to, you know, keep getting better for a band this good. I think it's amazing.
Yeah, it's good. More even my taste than the previous albums. Like, well, Aged Intellect, a little bit more slow and considered. This is more rocky, which is more the kind of thing I would like. So, okay, well, how did you pick a track? I always default to this one, but I mean, My Children is so good, but and various others. But I've gone for 10, Male Plague.
Yeah, what can you say? It's just great.
Yeah, I think the sequencing on the album works really well. So not only is that song really good, but comes after the name of the flower. I can't even say it, but Night Blooming Sirius or something.
Right, right. Yes.
And so it's just bang, and you're there. The opprobrium in his voice.
Right.
You know, it's about how the scent of politics and false news in there. So you know who we're referring to a little bit. And
yep.
Yep. Just a band on fire. And the drummer. Well, they're all great, but the drummer in this band is incredibly good.
Yeah.
And when you listen to the album again and again, sometimes you need an entry into the record, and then once you're listening to it again and again, you notice the things like that, which you don't, you know, sometimes it's just luck that you pick these things out.
Right. Yeah, I saw them on the tour after this album came out at a small microbrewery in Milwaukee. it was so great. Oh,
you're doing very well with the cool shows today, Will.
Yeah, it was great. I drove to Milwaukee and it was this bar called Company Brewing, and they just had a little stage in the corner, and you know, it was great. Like you were saying earlier, you could just walk up to the front and almost touch the band, you know.
Yeah.
Oh God, so great.
Well, the new album's coming. It's been delayed because of this situation, but looking forward to hearing that.
Right. I think it was going to come out in June, and now it's July or something. Yeah. And we were supposed to see them. South by Southwest is so sad. We shouldn't even talk about that. That's too sad.
It is.
Okay. Number two. Now, oh my goodness, it's so serious when you get to number two.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you've talked highly of this album before, And I'm glad you put it on the list because it's deserving of recognition.
Yeah, we were listening to it this morning. This is something that Amanda would listen to most of these things with me, but definitely this one, and listened to it together this morning. And I have no doubt in my mind that it should be here. The only doubt is whether it should be higher.
Mm-hmm.
So wonderful. Florist, The Birds Outside Sang. 2016. The World's Band podcast introduced me to this. I think it was one of those January ones, possibly. People can go back and check if I'm talking nonsense here, where it was just Will going through a few things that you've discovered.
Mm-hmm.
And you always say, I'm sorry for this. No one else was available this week, so we're just going to go through a few things quickly. And this is something twee coming up. I thought, okay, something twee. And really, it's funny. The whole story around it, she'd had the terrible bicycle accident and been in the emergency room recovering, and lots of the lyrics in the song are about having broken bones and wondering if she's going to survive, and heartfelt, charming, and just wonderful, really.
Yep.
Well, I picked, I don't think we won't get to the part of the song where it's like this, but this always makes you think of Radiohead, actually, particularly towards the end with the guitar. It could just be on OK Computer or something, which is amazing for me. I'm even saying this about a small indie band, but this is how I feel there. The songs are so well put together. You just think there must have been so much work to get it to sound this good and this well put together. So I always appreciate that. Track two, I Was.
I had to let that play for a little while. That's just so great. Florist.
Yeah, the build, the entry into the different parts of the song is so subtly done.
Yep. So that's Emily Sprague, and she's basically the one member of the band, but had collaborators on this album. And she's done a lot of solo stuff. Doesn't listening to this album make you wish she would do another album as more of a full band album?
Yeah, they had the other one, didn't they? If Blue Could Be Happiness, I think.
Yeah, and it's still pretty sparse compared to this one, I think. And then
yeah, I get the impression, the memory that it's quieter, maybe. Still good. Yeah, I know what you mean. If they could do another album like this, well,
yeah,
then, it would surely be the best thing of the next 10 years.
Yeah, so. that should be your goal, you know. The next album needs to be the best album of the next decade, right? Yeah.
I think as long as I live, that album by Florist will mean a lot to me. Wonderful stuff, really.
Yep. Great. Well, is it time? Is it time for number one?
Oh, slightly pipped to the post, though, Florist and Emily. I'm very sorry. I'm sure she won't care. Back to Canada, Prince Edward Island. No, the listeners to the podcast may have heard of this band before.
I think so, yeah.
Always making another appearance here.
Yep.
Well, I'm not going to say anything different to what's been said before, so I'm just going to say I really love it. Perfection. The second album is good too, of course, but this one always, I think it's just because this was first, and I think if every song's good and the album's out, that kind of takes precedence over something which comes later, which is also good. I know it's funny, really, but
yeah, I think all of us who like this band really love both albums, and you know, you can argue either way on it, on which one's better. I picked this one, and I think Chris and David both like the second one more, so yeah.
I'm going to say they're marginally wrong, but not too wrong on this one.
Right. I'll agree with that.
Yeah. Really, really, really good. 2014, this was. Scary how long ago. I think it came out in the summer and just sounds so much like the summer. You know, it's just everything's right. When you just nail it like this, it's good. It's fun for everyone. So there's some great hits. Every song is good, but I always come back to this one. I just love the drumming and the story. It's good fun. Track 4, Next of Kin.
Always, it's a pop classic, right?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, yep. Good nostalgia feelings for me there. They're one of those bands we talked about this before. Off the top of my head, certainly Veronica Falls, Florist, and Always. When you listen, they have these little tricks and hidden bits in the songs. When you notice them, you think, "Oh, thanks for putting that in there," and it rewards the deep listening. And I guess bands who I don't listen to at all have that too. But it's just when you notice it, you appreciate it.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's so much more than just you got a progression of 3 or 4 chords and repeat it. You know, there's all kinds of little stuff, cool stuff buried in there.
Yeah.
Great. And you figure the next Always album, you know, they'll be up to 3 albums in 8 years or whatever. And that'll probably be a good one too, I would imagine.
Yeah, so I wonder if they were planning anything for this year, but obviously they wouldn't. They're a strange band. I don't know if you feel the same about this, Will, but I've remarked about this, and whether I'm just out on a limb here, or they don't seem like other bands to me. They appeared in 2014, great, did some touring, then they were gone. Then they were back in 2017, did some touring, they're gone again. They don't exist between albums, really. They don't constantly tour, which is... It's not, you know, I'm not complaining. It's just an observation, really.
Right. I remember, you know, I loved the first one so much, and then a couple of years had gone by, and they were just nowhere, basically, to be found. And I remember, you know, I was just so anxious to hear another album and wondering when they would put out another album. And I remember finding 2 or 3, maybe it was just 2 songs that were new that somebody had put up on YouTube from live performances, and it was like, always new song, and they were great. So I'm like, oh man, then I was even more excited about whenever the next album was going to be. And then it just probably a couple months before the album came out, they just suddenly said, yeah, we're going to have a new album. So at some point in the next couple of years, I suppose that'll happen again, right?
You hope so. It's just intriguing, yeah. Isn't it? I think they got it because they, you know, I don't know what they do around their other activities. So they have jobs or studying or... They obviously made quite a bit of money when the first album came out, so they didn't need to tour constantly. It's a good model if you can get it.
Yeah, and I think I remember reading that the songwriting process was somewhat painstaking, and that Molly Rankin like just went and lived on Toronto Island or something, like just like for a month, and just worked on the song. So, you know, I guess that's the other side of it, right? If your songs are going to have all kinds of little subtleties and little things that are, you know, interesting little hooks and stuff, it probably isn't necessarily that easy to write them, you know? So part of it could be that she just takes a long time to write songs, and then they have to make them into a band song and all that stuff. And so, I don't know, hopefully it's fun for them. It's probably kind of recharging the batteries, right? When you have a new set of songs and can come out with it and play them. I always wonder about bands who record an album and they're still touring, and the new album that they've already recorded doesn't come out for another 6 months, and they're touring and they don't really they only get to play like maybe 1 or 2 songs from the album they've already recorded because they, you know, nobody's heard them, right? They probably are just thinking, God, we need this album to come out so we can start playing some different songs, you know?
Yeah, I think it was a bit of that, really.
Yeah. Well, great. That was awesome. We've got the live gig ranking, and we have the album ranking. So you've pretty much completed the decade.
Signed and sealed. Signed off on the decade now. Yeah, that was a good cathartic process to go through. I feel like a weight has lifted.
Yeah, good, good. Yeah, because you were talking about, you weren't even sure you were going to do it. But, it took, you had to be shut in for month or two.
This is like week 7 of our lockdown starting on Monday. So that's all I need to get me to do a best of decade list is six weeks in lockdown.
Yep. Well, great. So we've got a couple more people who could potentially do an end of decade list. We'll see. If we don't have one ready, we'll do some. We'll do a radical thing and talk about some new albums, because I've got a few lined up here that are podcast worthy. So we're not running out of content yet. So let's. I guess we'll say goodnight to the listeners. Should we do that?
Sounds good. They've had enough of me rambling on. Let's we'll sign off here.
All right. We will talk to everyone again next week with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Good night.
The Will's Band of the Week podcast is brought to you each week from Fourth Bedroom Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, with correspondents from the United States, Canada, the United Kingdom, and Australia. You can subscribe or download the podcast wherever podcasts are available or from our website, willsband.net. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and you can contact us directly by email to willsband@yahoo.com. Our theme music was composed by Grant and performed by Grant and Will. Thanks for listening.